excuse me as I skip around to my sticky notes, Mr. Byard.
Take your time.
And then, as I skip around, I notice there's, looks like a bridge over the wetlands. Is that correct? So that would be part of the mitigation that you would be doing with, I guess, the federal government on that one? Is that federal wetlands?
Mr. Johns, that's correct. If we impact the wetlands, it'll be handled through the Corps of Engineers. If we do a bridge and avoid the wetlands, then the Corps of Engineers would not be involved with that aspect. And we'll know the answer to that should this application be approved with that design consist of what the impacts may or may not be to the wetlands in that vicinity.
And I don't know, I've read so much, but somewhere in there it talked about your road improvements that you would be making from your entrance to Plantations Road would be once you've had 201 RV sites finished. Is that your intent?
Yes, that's what's proposed, and it's in Exhibit 4 is where the recommendation. The recommendations are in Exhibit 4 in your booklet if you want to refer to them.
And that's where they were talking about 400 units, not...
That was in Exhibit 3. That was the support facilities report. But the conclusions and recommendations right out of the TIS are actually Exhibit 4 in your booklet. And that's where it talks about basically the left turn lane will be built from day one for the first RV unit. And then the improvements within the about 1,500 feet would all be 11-foot lanes, 5-foot shoulders. And then by the 200th unit, the rest of the improvements would kick in. And that's what's proposed, and Delta will have their say on that.
And how soon would you anticipate having 201 units?
That may be a question for Nick, but I assume it depends on the success of the site.
Because I see that in Section 1, it totals out more than 201.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. That phasing isn't an exact representation, likely, of the construction phasing. And it will likely be the success of the project will determine how quickly we build the next few phases.
Because as we all know, if this was a traditional housing development, 201 units in today's market would take quite a while to develop. I suspect 201 RV sites could be done in a year and probably be filled up.
We hope that they fill up that quickly.
I'm about running out of sticky notes here, Mr. Chairman.
Well, you know, you...
I can come back and ask some more.
We can come back, yep.
All right.
If you think of something
else. In the interest of time...
We'll move on.
We'll move on, sir.
If you think of something, just let me know.
I will.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Burton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's talk about... when you say seasonal, what are the dates of seasonal?
I think it'll likely be mid-April through some point in October.
And then what would it look like? What happens?
Our hope is that most people that stay with us will store their RV at the site. Otherwise, they will be out of the site.
And storage, you have an area where you show RV storage. Does that fit 600 or whatever the total is minus the tents? Does that area fit all of the campers?
At this point, I don't believe it does.
Would it be mandatory that they would move them, or could they leave them and just walk away from them?
At this point, it's our thought to move them out.
So the campground would be winterized?
For all intents and purposes, yes.
And the motorhomes would be either asked to move or they... and could not.
Correct.
Would there be any outbuildings with these motorhomes?
There's canopies, not necessarily outbuildings that are actual structures, but there's canopies and different things that, you know, RVers bring with them.
What about porches?
There are porches on some RVs.
Permanent porches.
That is not the intent.
Not permitted.
It's a porch.
All improvements on a campsite have to be manufactured for camping purposes.
In other words, you cannot be stick built.
So you can get a screen room that goes to your RV, but.
It's designed, but it has to be designed for camping purposes.
Right, but it's not built.
Okay. Will the Welcome Center be part of phase one?
At least a portion of it will, yes. We'll have to have a Welcome Center initially for the initial 200 sites.
So it would be gated from day one?
It would.
Whether the gate be there or at the Welcome Center, it would be a.
There would be a gate, correct. The gate, the Welcome Center, because the only access is at Cedar Grove Road at this point, the gate and Welcome Center would be out at that access point.
Just for the record, what is the square foot of the sites? What is the minimum square foot? You mentioned that.
2,000 is required minimum by code. Our minimums are around 3,000 square feet, and some exceed that.
And if you could just review the road improvements just a little slower on how it goes all the way to Plantation.
You want me to show it on board?
Yes.
Basically, so you can see, our site access improvements will be a 310-foot left turn lane here.
Like day one.
That'll be day one, yeah. So, you know, you won't have an RV making the left in from the through lane. You'll have, and the shoulders I refer to at 5 foot, they'll be paved. They won't be gravel or grass. They'll be paved with a hot mix. So the transition from the get the through lane back to where it originally was will take about 550 feet coming over to here. So from this point up into the point, the Deldot project ends somewhere in this area. You'll have 11-foot lanes and 5-foot paved shoulders along Cedar Grove Road from our site access all the way up to Plantation Road once our 201st unit and Deldot project is done, which now, schedules aren't always set in stone, but currently it's scheduled for the spring of 2014, the Deldot project, with completion in fall of 2015.
All right, so is there any improvements going down Ward?
No, we removed, there originally was a temporary road, our temporary access, and we did have some improvements on road up to the temporary access, but since that access is now removed, there's no improvements on Ward Road because there won't be campers. There's no reason for campers to be going up and down Ward Road.
Okay, thank you. And the, one more, for the amphitheater and the chapel and the amphitheater and chattel, that's only for the campers' use, that is no, will be no public use at all with that.
That's correct.
I have no further questions at this time, but I may have some other ones later.
Okay. Well, we'll check back with you. Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to yield my time at this point.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Ross?
Yes. I just want to make sure that we're clear on what it is that we can do with the application. So I've mentioned this to Mr. Robinson to review. And, Vince, do you want to just go through what our choices are?
Yeah, I mean, I think where Mr. Ross is coming from is just sort of the different decisions that could be made on this. I mean, there's, you know, two applications. There's the rezoning and the conditional use. You know, certainly the commission could approve both the rezoning and also the conditional use. The commission could deny both the rezoning and the conditional use. If the commission was to deny the rezoning, we're left with, as I think Mr. Byard and Mr. Lank talked about, really the conditional use sort of not really feasible. I mean, there's a portion of the land that, you know, it could be done on that remains AR1, but you couldn't do it on the GR land, so it really becomes a markedly different project at that point if you don't make that rezoning. And then really the fourth option would be that you could approve the downzoning where this entire tract then becomes AR1, agricultural, You know, and still you do have the ability to deny the conditional use at that point. You're left with a large AR1 tract, and the permitted use is an AR1, you know, residential development at 2 units an acre. So I think that's sort of the outline I think you were looking for, Mr. Ross.
Yes, it is. Mr. Byrd, do you want to comment on that at all?
No, I will not criticize Mr. Robertson's analysis. He's on the money.
What would your reaction be, Mr. Byrd, if we did that last option? We approved the downzoning and denied the CU?
I can't speak for Mr. Hammond. I would be disappointed because what the result would compel is probably a grid subdivision that would do more damage to that forest than this campground proposal possibly could do.
Thank you. I'm not going to beat on you guys too much because we got enough people here that will probably do that. But you made a couple general comments in response to questions. One was in regards to the RVs staying on site for storage as opposed to going into the storage area for storage in the off season. You said that was not your intent at this time. This is a conditional use. So clearly, we can make sure that's your intent within our conditions. You understand that?
I do.
And as I understand, your intent is not to store them on site, so my position as an individual would be, if we got to that point, that we would stipulate that those RV campers would not overwinter on site, okay? We would make it part of the condition. You understand that? The other thing is the timing, when it's open and when it's closed. You said mid-April to sometime in October. Specifically, April 1st, April 15th, April 30th, October 10th. Specifically, what date you have? Because if we got to that point, we're not going to say around. We're going to say it's going to open no sooner than this date and close no later than that date. What do you want?
I'd say probably April 1st to October 31st.
That's at least clear. The check-in office, it's open the same time as phase one?
Yes.
Security is on site with phase one?
There will be a security guard on site, yes.
Gated and all that?
Correct.
Okay, and then the timing of the phases. As you're aware, we CUs have certain timings to be under substantial construction and use, and then you have to maintain that. Since you're proposing three phases in the CU, I just wonder if you object if we use those same timings as you complete phase one to say now you have so much time to substantially construct phase two, and then once you get done phase two, then you have so much time to substantially construct phase three.
I would prefer that not be the case. I think the intent is for this to grow as demand grows, not to build 200 sites and then because we have a time frame on it to build another 200 sites. So I would not prefer that.
All right. No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir. Mr. Lank?
No questions.
Okay. Mr. Abbott?
No questions.
Council?
No, I had a few, but I think they've all been answered. Thanks.
Okay, and we'll go back to Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When do you anticipate the traffic impact study will be reviewed and approved by DLDOT?
It was submitted January 11th. Typically, it takes them around 2 months, so mid-March, say. I mean, sometimes it's earlier, sometimes it's later.
And in your... there was talk about the road improvements from the site to Plantations Road. What about in the Mulberry Knoll Road?
No specific improvements are planned on Mulberry Knoll Road itself. At 24 and Mulberry Knoll Road, DLDOT has a project to do exclusive lanes on 24, left through and right, and I believe there's bike lanes in between the through and rights on there as well.
So for folks that would be perhaps on 24. Instead of my going up to Plantations Road and turning right, I'm going to be turning right on Mulberry Knoll Road because I get about 5 miles to the gallon. So I save myself a couple of gallons of gas by turning there instead. What kind of road conditions am I going to find?
I believe you've got about 11-foot lanes on Mulberry Knoll Road now. The primary route to and from the site is going to be from Route 1 through Postal Lane to Cedar Grove Road. That's the most direct route to the site.
Well, sir, I can personally tell you that if I was coming up Route 1, my route would be to go to 24 and turn right because my 37.5-foot rig would have trouble negotiating the turn there by Lowe's and then zooming all around on Plantations Road with
And I think the thought that most of the people are coming southbound on Route 1, I don't think there's a thought that there's going to be a large number coming northbound on Route 1.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to ask you one more time.
Well,
be quiet while the other people are talking. All right, go ahead.
Thank you. That way you can hear my question.
Yes.
So if I'm traveling south on Route 1, again, my route that as an maybe it's because of my lack of driving skills with a motorhome, but I can tell you my route would be to go to 24 and hang a right and then go up.
Well, if you did go to 24, then you could also hang a right on the plantation and make the left on the Cedar Grove Road.
You driven on Plantation Road in the summertime?
Yes. Okay. I try not to between 10 and 3 on a Saturday.
Mr. Johnson, I think Mr. Hughes referenced Postal Lane, which
right.
has already got a substantial improved intersection with lights and
correct.
Multiple lanes in and out, so that's why he referenced Postal Lane. And with the improvements DLDOT's going to require Postal Lane and Plantation Road, with Cedar Grove Road being an intersection and it's intended to be lighted, I believe, signalized, that would make that intersection more appropriate to go right straight across if this project were to be approved.
Good luck to him. Excuse me. No, I didn't mean to make that comment. How about any road improvements intended or planned for from your entrance to the Robinsonville Road?
There are no improvements planned in that direction.
Okay. I'm good for now, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Well, I'll check back with you one more time. Mr. Burton?
No, I'm good for now. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Johnson? Still okay?
I'm for the moment.
All right, then. Mr. Byard, if you take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of change of zone number 1725 and or conditional use number 1951, Jack Lingo Asset Management, LLC? Okay, I assume there are some who would like to speak in opposition. Everyone who wishes to speak is certainly going to be given an opportunity to do so, but I suspect there may be some folks here representing groups. First of all, are there any attorneys representing any opposition? Okay, you'll be first. Are there any other people, homeowner association presidents or folks like of that nature who are representing groups? Hold them up high so I can see them. Okay, you guys will go next. And then after that, we'll catch anybody else that wants to say something. And ma'am, you may have the floor.
Good evening, gentlemen. For the record, my name is Mary Schreider Fox of Steenwaler and Schreider Fox in Ocean View. And I am here this evening on behalf of the Retreat at Love Creek Homeowners Association. As you, I'm sure, know, it is a residential community located very close to the campground site that's been proposed. Some of the association members are here this evening and will be presenting their concerns to you. Before they begin, and by way of introduction, I want to offer some comments from the legal perspective. And, of course, I am talking about the comprehensive plan, as I always do, and the county's conditional use and zoning ordinances, as well as applicable state law. As has been described this evening, there are two parts to the application. There's a rezoning part and a conditional use part. Beginning first with the rezoning part of the request, The applicant is seeking to rezone a portion of the campground site from GR General Residential to the AR1 Agricultural Residential Zone. In this kind of a situation, one might think, this is a downzoning. Where is the harm in that? And there might not be any harm if the applicant was seeking to downzone in order to pursue a permitted use in the agricultural residential district. However, as the presentation you've just heard reveals, that is not the case here. What the applicant is seeking is a rezoning in order to develop the project pursuant to a conditional use permit. And that project will consist of 516 RV travelers, maybe coming and going seasonally, maybe coming and going daily or weekly. The applicant wasn't sure, as well as campers sleeping in tents and cabins. Same thing, maybe coming and going on a regular daily, weekly, or seasonal basis. That hasn't been determined. And again, this is not a permitted use, but rather a conditional use. All of this is important and necessarily part of the decision-making process for both this commission and eventually the county council when considering the rezoning part of this application. The applicant's proposed use of the property and conditional use request are inextricably intertwined with this rezoning request. As the court in Orchard Homeowners Association versus County Council said, the rezoning applicant's proposed use of the property in question is very relevant to the propriety of the rezoning request. Without a record as to how the applicant plans to use the property, the court is not able to determine whether or not the rezoning decision is acceptable under the comp plan, zoning statutes, and other relevant state law. Therefore, what the applicant wants to do with the subject property matters, whether we're talking about rezoning or the conditional use part of tonight's application. I mention all of this, of course, because the primary objections to both the rezoning and conditional use pieces of the application are based on the proposed use of the subject property. Section 6904 of Title 29 of the Delaware Code makes it clear that zoning decisions shall be in accordance with the comprehensive plan and shall be for the purpose of promoting the health, safety, morale, convenience, order, prosperity, or welfare of the present and future inhabitants of Sussex County. Some of the specific things that Section 6904 says must be considered are the lessening of congestion in the streets, protection of the tax base, and securing safety from fire, flood, or other dangers. Section 6904 also states that reasonable consideration must be given to, among other things, the character of the particular district involved, the conservation of property values and natural resources, and the general and appropriate trend and character of land, building, and population development. And it is our position that tonight's application is problematic on all of these fronts. Beginning first with the comp plan, the future land use map identifies, according to my viewing of the future land use map, much of the land that's being sought in the rezoning request as slated for mixed residential use with an environmentally sensitive overlay. The other land area for the campground project that is not in the mixed residential area is located in an area identified as being a low-density area with the environmentally sensitive developing overlay as well. To the extent that any of the land sought to be rezoned to AR1 is located in the mixed residential area on the future land use map, rezoning the land to AR1 will not be in accordance with the comprehensive plan. As the future land use element of the comp plan states, the future land use element, quote, is probably the most influential part of the comprehensive plan. The county zoning regulations are intended to carry out the future land use plan, end quote, page 3-7. And as already mentioned, state law requires that all zoning regulations be in accordance with the comp plan. In fact, in Title 9 of the Delaware Code, in both sections 6951 and 6959, it is clearly stated that the land use maps forming part of the comprehensive plan have the force of law, and no development shall occur except in conformity with the land use maps. Other requirements of state law are also left wanting by the rezoning application when taking into consideration the proposed use of the site. For example, the character of the particular district involved is problematic. Much of the surrounding area consists of residential developments of various sorts and sizes. proposed campground project is not residential in nature, and rather is a commercial venture designed to attract transient vacationing guests to our area. Another problem that's presented when considering the promotion of health, safety, morale, convenience, prosperity, welfare of the present and future inhabitants of Sussex County is when we take a look at the typical definition of the word inhabitant. According to Merriam-Webster's online dictionary, an inhabitant is one that occupies a particular place regularly or routinely. A synonym from the same source says an inhabitant is a resident. In this instance, when we consider the well-being of the present residents in the community and in the immediately surrounding area, pending application causes them great concern and doesn't further their welfare. They're concerned about their safety and convenience because of the condition of the existing roads, which has been discussed a lot here tonight. As you'll hear from some of the residents, they're narrow, they have sharp turns, and are largely without shoulders. And the idea of them being heavily traveled on some type of a regular basis, we're not sure what that'll be, by hundreds of large RVs is very concerning to the residents. It's a different type of traffic than what would be contemplated by a residential use or an agricultural use. It causes them great concern about their prosperity in terms of their property values and how this kind of commercial venture located so close and nearby will affect them. While the pending application may arguably be a good idea for inhabitants or residents of other parts of the country who want to come visit us, it is not a good idea for the inhabitants and residents of our part of the country here in Sussex County. Yet another problem we find when considering the pending application is when we think about lessening of congestion in the streets and securing safety from fire, flood, or other dangers. In this instance, according to the information that is on file with the commission, and I believe it's part of the packet that the applicant submitted to you, the level of service for the Plantations Road, Cedar Grove Road, and Postal Lane intersection that's been discussed tonight has an unacceptable F rating. And much discussion's been had tonight about DLDOT's future plans to improve that intersection. But in the meantime, we have a congestion problem that this different type of traffic, these large RVs, will certainly exacerbate and is something that was unanticipated by when these roads originally were constructed, being so narrow, small, sharp turns. And even if the campground is a seasonal destination, people will be coming and going from the campground out into the greater community, probably, maybe on a regular basis. That could be daily, and thus the traffic increase, we believe, is much greater than that anticipated by the applicant. Another danger presented by the campground is a very practical one that comes with campgrounds, and that is campfires will be permitted. According to the draft rules for the camp that are on file with the commission, campfires will be permitted and must be extinguished by midnight. Campfires, I understand, go hand in hand with camping. It's part of the experience. We all love a good campfire. But they also make a campground project very unsuitable and more dangerous in a residentially developed area. If something were to go wrong, if something wasn't put out, the consequences could be severe, particularly for the neighboring communities. And last but not least, the natural resources on and around the subject property are a source of great concern as well. DENREC expressed certain concerns in the plus comments about the protection of what it believes are some quite rare species and unique habitats. I understand that the applicant's environmental review and scientists have taken a different view. To that, I can only respond by urging the commission to give DENREC's comments and concerns appropriate weight, as it is the state agency charged with the protection of our environment and natural resources. So for all these reasons, and when taking into consideration the applicant's plans for the property, which is something the Orchard Homeowners Association case tells us we should do, the rezoning request is not appropriate and should be denied. The same is also true for the conditional use piece of the application. As with the rezoning request, a conditional use request also has a relationship with the comp plan. And the comp plan must be considered when making a decision on a conditional use. As previously mentioned, part of the project is in a mixed residential area on the future land use map, and part is in a low-density area, both with the environmentally sensitive developing area overlay. Under all of these designations, residential development is permitted, and non-residential development is either specifically discouraged, as in the mixed residential area, or only certain types are deemed appropriate. According to the future land use element, in low-density areas, business development should be largely confined to businesses addressing the needs of the primary uses of agricultural activities and single-family detached homes. Retail and office uses are permitted and should focus on providing convenience, goods, and services to the nearby residents. In the environmentally sensitive developing area, a range of housing types are also appropriate, as are retail and office uses, or like commercial or institutional uses that provide convenient services and allow people to work nearby. The pending application does not fit any of these use categories. Again, this is not a residential project. After all, there won't be any residents. There are going to be vacationers or visitors, as the applicant has described them. They will be RV and camping enthusiasts coming to enjoy our area, but they will not be residents, and thus this isn't a residential project. Any goods or services being provided within the park are being offered for the park vacationers only and not for the surrounding neighborhood. The comp plan is not the only hurdle which the project can't overcome. The language of Section 115-171 of your zoning code also presents certain problems. That section states that conditional uses are to be, quote, essential and desirable for the general convenience and welfare, end quote. For all the reasons already stated, this project is not essential for the general convenience and welfare of the neighborhood. Arguably, it's for the convenience and welfare of people from other places, for the developer and its desire to have a successful commercial venture, but not for the surrounding neighborhood. Lastly, we must look at the special requirements set forth in Section 115-172H. Specifically about campgrounds. In subparagraph 9, it states, quote, all units to be used for the purpose of human habitation shall be tents, travel trailers, recreational vehicles, and equipment manufactured specifically for camping purposes, end quote. The only exception to that is one structure or manufactured home within the campground area that may be used by the park manager as a residence or an office. In this instance, there are 82 cabins for human habitation proposed, something that clearly falls outside the scope of subparagraph 9. Additionally, it is important to consider whether the amenities being provided within the project are appropriate and in conformity with Section 115-172H. As you've heard tonight, an outdoor amphitheater has been proposed, swimming pools, a canoe kayak area, possibly offering tours or trips out into the water. And all of these are recreational uses. Section 115-172H permits the existence of small retail businesses in the park, such as a grocery store or an automatic laundry. But it's silent with respect to any of these type of recreational facilities that are not small retail stores or facilities. In other conditional use situations that are discussed in Section 115-172, recreational space or facilities are specifically permitted and provided for. For example, in the mobile home park context, recreational land is specifically contemplated. You can find that in subparagraph G of subsection 172. In the swimming or tennis club context, outdoor recreational facilities are specifically permitted and requirements about pumps and filters, fences, et cetera, are set out. Those are found in subparagraph F. Yet nothing similar is contained in or contemplated by subparagraph H for campgrounds. I submit that this type of project, like others recently proposed by other developers, are simply beyond the scope of the more traditional campground project that's contemplated by Section 115-172H as presently written. Therefore, in closing, and for all of the reasons, and most importantly, because of this project's nonconformance with the comprehensive plan, we hope that the Commission will recommend denial of the application, both the rezoning request and the conditional use request. I want to thank you for listening and considering these thoughts and comments. This concludes my prepared remarks, and unless the commission has anything further to request from me, I'll be happy to turn the floor over.
Great. We thank you. We'll let you know.
Question.
Thank you.
Question?
Question. Yes.
I have a copy of your comments.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
Just the benefit of my record, because I hate to have
to
write them all.
Do you want me to email them to you?
That's fine. That's
that would be great, because I've marked this one up a little
That's
bit.
Fine. That's fine.
I appreciate
okay.
keep the record
thank you.
Open
yeah.
for that.
And Mary, if you could email them to me also.
I'll email them to both of you.
Decided some legal precedent.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, those representing groups, we're going to start all the way in the back. I saw a hand go up all the way back here. Okay, yes, ma'am, you first, ladies first, and then the gentleman after you, and then we'll start working our way forward.
Hello.
Hi.
My name is Mona Schwartz. I live in Hart's Landing. I'm a resident, a full-time resident in Hart's Landing, and I'm also the treasurer of the board of Hart's Landing of the Homeowners Association. And I cannot speak to any of the legal or the regulatory issues that have been raised tonight. I wouldn't even try to. Okay. But I can try to speak to some of the quality of life issues that have been raised and that I'd like to bring forth for you to consider. The first one is nowhere in the conversation tonight or in anything else I've read has there really been a discussion on Route 24 traffic coming eastbound. In the summer, we live on Route 24. It is backed up. We're 2 miles off of Route 1 now, and it is backed up probably another mile past our home. We get a lot of beach traffic, I believe, from the Virginia, Washington, Maryland areas, not just from the north. I think we get just as much, if not more, traffic from the west. How are we going to handle all of this additional traffic on Route 24? We put in for a light on our corner to try to get out of our homes, and we were turned down by, I don't remember who we sent the application to, but we were turned down for the lights, saying it was unnecessary. I don't know how we're going to ever get out of our development under these conditions. That was first. The second is, it was mentioned somewhere in the presentation that the other RV and campgrounds in the neighborhoods have been filled to capacity. Has anybody gotten an actual review or study of what the occupancy rates are of those other campgrounds? Because I think that both you on the panel and our homeowners should be allowed to see them. To, in fact, verify that, in fact, these other campgrounds that are currently available are, in fact, full to capacity, and that's why we have a need for an additional campsite.
Just, I'll just for clarity's sake, because there may be some question, I think it was talked about in tab 15 of the exhibit book, there is a letter from Bob Raley of the Holly Lake Campground that speaks to that. So,
okay.
My
third question is, it was raised tonight about the preference for daily rentals, for weekly rentals or monthly rentals rather than daily rentals. If there is no comment in your approval, if you were to approve this plan, how in fact will we really monitor that in fact we don't have transients every day or every weekend filling our local neighborhoods and campgrounds? And this is not to say that RVers or campers or tenters or whatever are any different than anybody else, but we do have a growing issue with the law today in terms of break-ins, in terms of drug use, et cetera, et cetera. And this is from full-time residents, and now we're talking about transients as opposed to, quote, residents, as the lawyer raised as a point. The fourth point I had is somewhere along the line, I was told, and maybe incorrectly, that they were proposing a bar / potential restaurant right at the point on Love Creek.
That was right next to the marina that they were proposing, I think.
Well, it shows on the site plan there is a dock bar that's, yeah. And that
dock was, bar, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was nowhere mentioned this evening, but we're now talking about a bar and people drinking on vacation right at the point, which if you go down the creek, you will see is very, very close to the Briarwoods property and the Hart's Landing property at that point.
I'll find out more about
that's
that.
That's a major concern.
I'll find
major.
Out more about that.
That was point four. Point five, I'm a kayaker. And anybody who kayaks on Love Creek can tell you that at certain points of the day, the water is about this high. And you cannot go up and back. You have to get out of your kayak, unless you know what you're doing, pull the kayak. You're up on the land. You're into the weeds because the tide is very, very in and out. If you're talking about adding to this section, because it's quite a distance to get from this campground out to the open water, you have to go under the bridge, you have to go past what used to be a marina, which they're working on now, I don't know, the restaurant, I don't know what they're working on there, but you have to go quite a distance. If you start putting 100 or 200 kayaks, canoes, pedal boats, or whatever, on that narrow, very shallow piece of water, I can't see how we're not going to have major problems. Aside from my own personal problem, which is I'll never go out kayaking again, I can't imagine there's not going to be problems with the environment. There's basically very little water there to begin with, and it is very narrow in some of those sections. This is a question I have no idea what the answer is to, so I may be stating something very silly, but I would ask what the tax implications are to Sussex County of having 500 or 600 homes versus 500 or 600 RVs and campers, campsites and cabins. Because if we're trying to protect our taxes and 500 homes at possibly $1,000 a home, if my math is correct, is $500,000 a year in tax revenue? I don't know how a campground pays taxes. I have no idea. But to me, it's a relevant question. Generating income for a particular group versus generating income for the entire community and for the residents that are already here. And my last question is, my last point is, and this is a biased point, highly biased.
Okay.
And that is,
it's your time.
I'm not certain, and I would want to hear a lot more from other realtors about how this does not impact our home values. Because I'm sure if you line up 10 realtors in this room, you will get 5 people on either side of the fence on that question.
Depends on who's paying them.
I grit. I said I was biased, as they are.
Laughter at the chairman's jokes is permitted, but applause. Okay.
I thank you very much for
you're welcome for
your
to
consideration.
Go ahead and take a seat or a stand back where you were.
Thank
but
you
I am
very
going
much.
To ask the applicant to come up and talk to us about this bar a little bit because you raise a good point. One of the things that we try to do here is make sure the truth, at least as best as we know it, is being told. And we know that this thing with Marina just wasn't something you were doing. But there is a bar shown on the plan. I know it doesn't say restaurant, but if you could tell us something about the scope of that and how you see it operating.
I think we see it as a very small kind of shack-style bar. There's a...
Like a tiki bar?
Exactly. That serves drinks only. It's not a restaurant. It's a very small bar for residents only.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Take a seat. Okay, sir. You're next.
Can I ask Mr. Johnson a question?
You can ask Mr. Johnson a question.
Mr. Johnson, it's your experience as a camper that a bar is necessary for campers to drink?
I have a bar on wheels.
And in the event that this application were looked upon favorably, that could be certainly could be a condition in a conditional use. And for For those of you, I know you don't come here every week. At least I don't remember seeing you. But the conditional use is different from the change of zone in that the change of zone is essentially a yes or no question. A conditional use does allow the commission to put restrictions and various conditions on. So when you hear us referring to those kinds of things, that's what it's about. But we're getting ahead of ourselves because we haven't even decided whether or not this is a good thing to do yet. So go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, before he goes on, just to add to what you were just saying, we make recommendations to council. Council has a final decision of what conditions are.
Oh, absolutely. I would definitely make that clear before this meeting is over. That's not a problem. Go ahead.
Jason Beal, Delaware Nature Society. We are a statewide nonprofit environmental organization, and we do have some concerns based on the potential for runoff. I do applaud the developers and the focus on non-permeable surfaces. However, our greatest area of concern relates to the presence of endangered species on the property. And DNREC, in fact, noted in the species of concern, a review of their database indicated the following state rare, federally listed or endangered species. Including the eastern tiger salamander and the barking tree frog. Both of these species breed in Welch's Pond, which is the large kind of circular shape there, which is a Delmarva Bay, basically a surface wetland, provides temporary breeding habitat for these animals. They cannot survive in fishless ponds, and their ranking of S1 means there's only five or less locations in the entire state of Delaware. They're also endangered in New York, New Jersey, Maryland, Virginia, which means that any bit of habitat loss in Delaware, any of those states, significantly impacts the population. The Welch's Pond population is believed to be the highest of the known populations in the state. And I'm concerned that the environmental review that was done, which does contradict DNRECs, might not have been complete or accurately conducted. And then secondly, I'd like to talk a little bit about the life cycle of these animals. While they do use the ponds for breeding, tiger salamanders are actually breeding right now. They breed through the winter months. The tree frogs breed primarily in May and June. The rest of the year, they're actually out in the upland areas, woodland buffer areas, and any disturbance to the woodlands in those areas fringing the pond can have impact on them in the largest part of their life cycle, which is actually out of the water. So I would just like the council to consider examining the status of the environmental review. What Delaware Nature Society would like to recommend to the developers and to the council is, in lieu of these unique species present on the property, that the council strongly consider not approving, but then the developers potentially consider working with the state of Delaware or the Delaware Nature Society or other conservation organizations to look at either a conservation purchase or easement or some other way that can preserve the habitat and still give financial compensation to the developer. Thank you.
All right, sir. We thank you. Yes, sir. Okay. And we had a couple others. Okay, you'll be next. Okay, well, I'll let this gentleman in the dark sweater. He's got way more hair than I do.
Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Paul Hamisfar. I'm a resident of the retreat at Love Creek, which is about a quarter of a mile away from this proposed development. And I am the president of the homeowners association there at the retreat at Love Creek, and I represent roughly 161 home sites and about 300 and some people who are very interested in this project. And when we first learned about this in November, we really took a lot of effort to understand what was being proposed and get the facts. And with that, we now have really come up with the opinion from our constituents that there is an overwhelming objection to this project, not only by the members of our community at the Retreat at Love Creek, but also numerous communities which are also supporting us in this effort that surround this particular area. They include, just to mention a few, Webb's Landing, Briarwood, Hart's Landing, Bayfront, Plantations, Ward Road, residents, and so forth. We've obtained, as you've noted, over 600 signatures of individuals who have said they are objecting to this particular request of rezoning and conditional use. And I'll just briefly summarize a few of the reasons that we have come to this conclusion and recommend that the Planning and Zoning Commission do not approve these two conditional use and the zoning change. There was discussion, and we have people also willing to speak in more detail on these topics, and they will do that at your pleasure. The traffic impacts, we talked about this, and there's just no way there's not going to be an impact on traffic in the area with these types of high-density RVs being brought into the area. There's a lot of talk about Cedar Grove Road east of the proposed site. But if you continue on Cedar Grove Road just past where the entrance is, you run into a very sharp S-curve, several S-curves, and there are no shoulders there. There are wooded areas on one side of that. And if you go a little bit further, you come through an area that is all residential, including the Ward Road. And while they may not be going down Ward Road, there's a very good chance they'll be going down Cedar Grove Road toward Robinsonville out to the west. The assumption that was made in the traffic study that at least we had knowledge of is that everybody's coming from the east. Nobody's coming from the west. So all the traffic impact was designed to come down Cedar Grove Road from Plantation, which is wonderful if people do that. But if you have a GPS, the GPS will take you a different route, no doubt. Also, the infrastructure. If you have ever traversed over Ward Road, Cedar Grove Road near Ward, it is a very narrow lane road. I can't imagine what it would be like to navigate an RV across that road. We are very concerned about the fact that there are school buses up and down that road all the time during the school season, and that's a good portion of when these campers are going to be there. And I can envision in my mind a rear-ended collision of an RV and a bus on this narrow road. I've asked our community. Everybody that lives in that community knows people go over the center line. Everybody's had that experience. And if it's an RV, it's quite a different matter than a small residential vehicle. And that's a very big concern for us. We also touched on the fact that there may be daily rentals. We don't really have an answer for that. That's also a concern, because then there'll be more and more people coming in and out. As far as the residential impacts, we are of the opinion that it's very unlikely property values would increase. I think, again, as the previous person said, that's debatable, but I think that anyone with just a common sense would say that does not seem possible. Also, there's no realty transfer tax that will be generated from these sites. So that revenue will not be incorporated by putting this in place. And as I understand, in the fiscal year 2012, the transfer tax alone generated $14.3 million for the county. That's a considerable amount of money, which will not be available for us taxpaying individuals. We talked about the noise and light pollution that's going to occur by having this in place. And I think it was pointed out that this is a destination where people will come and stay. Okay, so if I buy that fact, which I don't buy, but if they come and they park their RV and they stay there, then what's the benefit for the county? What's the benefit for the rest of us? If they don't spend any money on restaurants, if they don't, for some reason, decide they want to go to the beach, I can't imagine they would think that, but if they wanted to go to the beach, for example, they would have to leave, wouldn't they? And the campsites, the cabins, can allow two vehicles per cabin. So now we've got another high density of vehicles beside RVs that are going to be in that area. Environmentally, we've talked about some of the endangered species, and in fact, we've observed those environmental sensitive animals, creatures in our neighborhood. Some of the kids have found the tiger salamander right in our development, which again is not that far from where this proposed site is going to be. The traffic on Love Creek, as pointed out, I am also a kayaker. It is not easy to navigate that at all times. You have to pay attention to the tide, and if you have people that are there for a weekend or a week and have never been on Love Creek, they could be in some serious problem, and that could end up being a real problem for retrieval of those individuals. And also, we talked about historic preservation sites. Now, apparently, they have not discovered any, but that does not say that there is not something that could be found there, and it's not all unlikely that there could be some other archaeological or cemeteries that exist in that area. We talked again, and we are very concerned about who polices these transient visitors. There are suggestions that there's going to be a security force. Is that one person, two persons, 10 people? That's a very interesting problem that I think we all worry about. How are we going to control the noise as well as any other kind of activities that might be going on in that area. What about the EMTs? What about the police that are going to have to be involved at some point or other? How will they? We already have shortages of some of these services, and now we have another possibly up to 3,000 people a year coming to this site and expecting, in some cases, having to use EMTs. I think that's also another big concern. Also, Beacon Middle School is on Route 24. While it's not adjacent to this property, is in very close proximity to that. And there's a, again, as I said, there's a lot of students that have to be transported by bus up and down these roads, and that occurs for a great portion of when these people are going to be there. So again, as a local resident and taxpayer and homeowner, and representing, as I said, a community of about 300 people, we would ask that the Commission would not approve the rezoning request and the conditional use request changes proposed by Jack Lingo Asset Management. We believe that this development is inconsistent with the surrounding material, surrounding community, would irreparably harm the natural environment, and is unfair to your constituents. And I thank you very much for your attention.
All right, sir, and we thank you. All right, so you're next. And who else do we have representing a group? Okay, you'll come on, and then when you're done, gentlemen, in the we got one way over here. We'll take one from this side. You're next, and then the cream color sweater. We're lined up now. Go ahead.
Great. Good evening. My name is Charlie Tanachi. I'm a resident of the Retreat of Love Creek. I'd like to talk about the impact on the traffic to this project. But before I do that, let's do some numbers. The proposed project will have a total of about 620 sites. Not counting the RVs, that could be anywhere from 620 cars to 1,200 cars, assuming that there's two vehicles per every site. The project will also have anywhere from 1,200 to 2,400 people. A small, high-density city, in fact, and in an area of only 160 acres. To put it in perspective, the population of Lewis is under 2,800 at the last census. And all of the new population will be using Cedar Grove Road to access the entire area. First of all, to get to the campgrounds, the RVs coming from the west will be coming from Plantation Road to Robinsonville Road and to the unimproved portion of Cedar Grove Road. That's what the GPS says. That's what most people will do because it'll bypass all of the traffic jams on Plantations and Route 24. RVs coming from the south will use Plantation Road and the developed or improved portion of Cedar Grove. And RVs coming from the north will also use Plantation Road to Robinsonville Road to the unimproved portion of Cedar Grove Road. Robinsonville Road is about equivalent to the unimproved quality of the Cedar Grove Road as well. And cars coming into and leaving this new city would be funneled through both directions of Cedar Grove Road to head to Lewis, Rehoboth Beach, and Highway 1, and to any other point. So a two-lane rural road is going to be stressed beyond its original design capabilities, causing more accidents, more traffic, more congestion, more gridlock, and more bottlenecks. We all know how the traffic in the summertime on Highway 1, Plantation Road, and Route 24 is. These roads will become further inundated with additional vehicles if the campground is committed to go forward. There's slow traffic now. It'll come to a virtual halt when the project is in its full capacity. The secondary roads of Cedar Grove, Mulberry Knolls, and Robinsonville Road and their intersections were never built with that much traffic in mind and will become jammed with vehicles at every intersection during the day, especially during rush hour and when school buses are in operation. We know that when there's an accident on Plantation Road and cars are routed onto Cedar Grove, the traffic builds up from Robinsonville Road intersection at Cedar Grove all the way towards Ward Road and beyond. So we know that traffic just jams there. And these roads are small, single lane direction in each direction. There's no shoulders, so there's no getting around any roadblocks. There's no way to get around any cars that may in fact have been stalled on the roads if in fact we have these great big RVs in the way. I'd like to talk about the contributions also of the RVs themselves. There's going to be roughly 450 RVs there. The RV traffic will be routed from Cedar Grove, where a turning lane will be built, the entrance of the campground, as we heard. There's a blind turn right at Coastal Towing, near where the turning lane will be located. And any vehicle that's coming in the opposite direction of that turning lane will suddenly be thrust upon a great big RV making a turn into the campground. It's an accident waiting to happen because of this blind turn. Remember, these cars, these RVs are going to be towing cars themselves also. So they're going to be roughly the length of a small tractor trailer. There's also a claim that this is going to be a destination area. The reality is people aren't going to come here to go to this campsite. They're going to come here for our beaches. We have the best beaches in the area. They're going to come here for the restaurants and the entertainment and the shopping that we have here. There's just not enough on Love Creek to keep 2,400 people entertained. Then there's the transition days. These are the days on Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays when the RVs will be going home and coming in for the week or the weekend. Maybe not all of them, but maybe, what, half or 200 RVs? That's a lot of traffic going onto these roads lined up on Cedar Grove to enter the campgrounds or to leave. Think of what kind of traffic jams there'll be on Cedar Grove. How long can the proposed turning lane be to accommodate all of these vehicles? 350 is what, 10 RVs? It's probably less than that. It's four. So how many will actually be lined up on Cedar Grove on this developed section? Traffic is going to come to a halt and with no ability to pass the RV roadblock. And it will be in both directions of Cedar Grove because it won't take long to figure out that Robinsonville Road is a better way of getting out of the area because there's less traffic involved. And there's no lights on Plantation. Well, there are no lights on Robinsonville Road. There will be on the Plantations. I don't think anybody knows how many cars are really going to be involved in this, but I suspect that it's going to be more than the roads can handle. And I think the answer is not many at all, and probably not the number imposed by this campground. And remember that there's going to be now 82 cabins, which is like a large motel. And no one is going to be going there for an extended period of time. They're going to be transient locations. They're going to be here for the week or the weekend. And that's just going to add that many more cars to the roads that are already overburdened. And they'll have to use Cedar Grove Road to come in and out. And as far as the studies being used by the developer to access the roads, they submitted their traffic impact study only 2 weeks ago. Not much time to evaluate it. But we were told that they were using national mobile home traffic statistics as the basis of telling us what kind of traffic we're going to see with this RV campground. That's just absurd. This isn't a mobile home site. This is a beach site. This is a place where people are going to go shopping, that are going to go to the beaches and go to the restaurants and entertainment. And this is not the destination that they expect. I thank you.
Okay, thank you.